Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Question Reality. My name is Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. For 9 years, we have been ranked the number one entertainment career advice radio show worldwide. And this show is for you if you are questioning your career reality by considering or currently pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. Now, the guests on this show provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in a wide variety of showbiz jobs. Now, the guests on this show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, producers, directors, casting directors, talent managers, agents, screenwriters, actors. Oh, I need to be in better shape just to get through this paragraph. Comedians, novelists, script supervisors, basically the list goes on and on. What's special about this show is that all of our guests have been selected because they are at different stages of their careers, from celebrity status, obviously, to professional. And then once in a while, we will bring on the novice or the beginner. So that means that we will definitely have someone on this show who will be able to answer your show business career questions. Doesn't matter. Someone's got to be on. Now, if you missed any of our shows or you want to seek advice about a specific entertainment career, go to our archive page on the latalkradio.com website and search for our show title, Question Reality, or search by my name, Priscilla Leona, and you can download and listen to any of the interviews 24 hours a day. Now, all of the Question Reality shows are also available for free on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.com under the podcast section. So please go there so you can listen to me 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Wouldn't you love to wake up to this voice? Yes. Okay. All right. Maybe not. Okay. So also make sure you get our newly designed free app on the homepage of the LA Talk Radio website. It's located towards the bottom. I get so many emails. Where is it? I can't find it. It's on the right. Scroll down, and it's right there. Finally, if you want to be a guest or refer someone to be on this show, to promote yourself, the products, help our listeners with your sage career advice, we are currently booked for the rest of the year, but we're booking for the new year, January, February, and March. So go to our official website, which is questionrealityradioshow.com, and click the contact link and submit for interview consideration. And we have a waiting list. Again, we're booked 6 months or a year in advance, but please submit anyway, because we can always book you a spot. And then if you have something come up, like a tour or a film or whatever the appointment may be, we can always reschedule you. But it's just important to get on the book. So there you go. Now, we have oh my gosh, when I saw this man, the guest today, I was at the Sai Suman Celebrity Fashion Show in April, and I saw him across the room, and I said, Now, I know you may think I'm weird, but when I see people, I literally, it might be a mental deficiency, I see and hear things. Like, I saw wind blowing through his hair. And then I heard like, da 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 da. I don't know what it was. Albert thinks I'm very strange. But I saw him and I'm like, oh my God, who is he? And then someone said, it's so weird that you found this man, because that is John Blythe Barrymore III. Yes! Yes, that is who we saw. He is a producer and I love to say this word, Finally, I get to use it. It was one of those spelling bee sixth grade words I learned. I never got to use it until I met John Blythe Barrymore III. He is a scion to the Barrymore Empire. Another applause, can we, Albert? I think we give him another applause. We don't have many scions on the show. Now, if you're not familiar with who John is, he is a film and television actor. He was born to John Drew Barrymore and Cara Williams. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And as such, he is from the famous entertainment industry Barrymore family. He is the half-brother of actress Drew Barrymore, as well as the grandnephew of Ethel Barrymore and Lionel Barrymore. And what I found so cute was that his first role on television, he was Zeke in the 1970s television series Kung Fu. Oh, that was one of my favorite shows.
It wasn't my first role. My first role, I was four.
See, you need to change your IMDb.
My first role, I was 4 months old.
Oh.
It was live TV. Hallmark Theater. Went out live. There was no videotape. Went out once, and they managed to make money on it because there was only three networks. My father was playing Moses, and I played baby Moses in the basket.
I'll be damned. Oh, my God. Well, I stand corrected. That damn IMDb is always giving me the wrong information. We also have the hot, sexy Eric Erickson as the co-host.
Aww.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Our Eric is, among so many things, he's so multi-hyphenated. He is an actor, a producer, a screenwriter, and he is here to tell us about his new feature film, Truth, which, if I'm correct, he just started shooting, I believe, on September 12th. I could be wrong, but hopefully that is.
We are in the can.
Can I remember?
Yeah,
we are in the can. Oh, yeah, that definitely bring that closer to John because we can't hear John. What's happening? She said we can't hear you. Oh, that's better.
Is that better?
Yeah, you remember how you were on that show Lick last week? Well, get up there like you're ready to lick that microphone.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So listen, real quick, Eric's website is theangryviking.com, valhallaprods.com, and the I feel like saying the Klondike Brothers, but I know it's the Kondalik Brothers.
The Kondalik Brothers.
.com, so check that out. Also, real quick, I just want to thank Joe Estevez, professional actor, brother Martin Sheen, uncle of Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen. He came on the show a couple weeks ago, and we are so excited. He is going to be starring opposite William Shatner and Christopher Lloyd in the romantic comedy Senior Moment. It's coming out maybe possibly in January, not sure. But Joe, this is for you. We love you. We hope
Hi,
you
Joe.
Come. Hi, Joe. Oh, I think.
I know Joe.
I think. Oh, okay. Apparently, why do we have the gong?
Because that was the for Joe.
Oh, for Joe. Oh, we get a gong. Joe gets a gong. Okay, Joe Estevez. If you want to check the movie out, it's SeniorMomentMovie.com. So we're going to have Joe back on the show. And I wanted to thank the very esteemed and elite guest casting action community committee members, panelists. They were recently on the show. They are some of the top A-list casting directors in this business, which included Gary Zuckerbrod, Alan Hooper. He's currently casting Modern Family. He just got, I think they just renewed him for two more years. Yes, two more years. So yay, Alan. Asia Rae Coleman, actress, author, and David H. Lawrence, the 17th. We got John, who's a third. Well, David's a 17th. My God. He's an actor, voiceover, artist, teacher, and he created an app for actors that actually help you to memorize your lines. So you might want to check the app store for that. Jason Kennedy, my lovely little Jason Kennedy. He is the casting director for NCIS. Oh, you know what? God bless him. I'm atheist. I don't know why I say that. But I just say it. What it was. And it's like you say like. He was on the show. And then a couple of days later, he actually called me and said, Priscilla, I have a project that I think you might be perfect for. And so I went in and auditioned for NCIS. And That was a total disaster. Me of all people, you know how anal retentive I am. I've been on the show 9 years. You know that I tell everyone, when you are an actor and you are going out for a role, when you get the sides, you always, 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 always read through all the parts that are X'd out. You go through the whole entire thing. Do I not know this, people? You know I know this. Well, what do? I go on the audition. I forget to read a whole line. I printed it out. I don't know what happened to it. And I read one and they're looking at me like, okay, well, where's the rest? So I look like a total nut. I was like, oh, Jason, I'm so sorry. But he was cool. He's like, ah, it's okay. Okay. So you might want to go and Google the Community Action Committee casting members, because they would love for you to support the casting director workshops. As you know, I don't want to get political. I'm not political, but you know they're shutting down casting director workshops right and left, and they are actually arresting a lot of casting directors. So this particular community casting committee is helping by having funding for their lawyers and et cetera, to help them, because it's really getting crazy. And casting director workshops are very, very important. Legitimate ones are very, very, very important for actors. So Google them. Okay. Lastly, we are going to go on. Now, I have gotten tons of emails. I know I forgot to tell you what the first week in October, you know, I always tell you what my Halloween love is. And you know, Halloween and Christmas are absolute favorite holidays. And I am going to tell you what my 8 rules are, but I'm going to break it down into like 3, and every week I'm going to tell you 3 more till we get to 8, because I just can't go through the whole 8. Okay, I cannot do it. So first I want to start out with really quick, Eric and John, how do you guys feel about Halloween? Like, do you participate in Halloween?
I love Halloween.
You do?
Because, you know, the most prudish women, it's like, what kind of slut can I dress as this year?
What? Do you dress like a hooker? Like, for real?
No, no. All the women in Hollywood. All the ones who usually are the most prim and... Halloween is their night to light. What kind of slut can I be this year?
You would look good in a sexy maid outfit.
You know,
you have the legs for it.
And have.
Yes, okay. I bet.
In the back of that closet.
And what about you, Eric? What's your favorite costume if you dress up? Obviously a Viking. You would be a perfect Viking.
Last year I went as a nerd. I showed up. Hello, everybody. It's nice to be here. And I just kind of showed up like that with the glasses and the whole thing.
Okay. So, see that.
The Viking thing's a little offensive to me.
Because, it is.
Yeah, because it's actually German.
They never wore... Wagner put Vikings in horned helmets. They never actually wore horned helmets.
Really?
Yeah, I got a backer right
see?
Here.
We didn't even know. You're giving us like sage wisdom over here, John Blythe Barrymore. I'm going
to
say that.
I'm
going
to bring you to a party and back me up, because no one believes
it. So, number one, decorations. Halloween decorations are absolutely fabulous. They're not too sentimental. You know, they're not overly expensive. You don't need wires like you do at Christmas. So, but yet you get to appreciate when somebody has a party and their teamwork and the effort. So, decorations is my number one thing. Halloween music. Oh, my God. It is so fun. Monster Mash, the Ghostbuster theme. By the way, I just did a duet with Ray Parker Jr. You can go on YouTube and see it. I think I did a good job. The Addams, the Addams Family theme song, the Twilight Zone, Michael Jackson Thriller, Rockwell's Always Feel Like Somebody's Watching Me. What's your favorite Halloween song, John Blythe Barrymore? Well, I can't believe he's speechless. This is the first time you have
what's that?
Not
what's
been...
that one that was always playing after people jumped out the window? Gloomy Monday?
Stormy Monday?
No, it was a...
After people jumped out
the
window.
Yeah, it was like 1929, and often after they leapt out the window, this song would be playing on. There was
I never knew about that. Dan, we got to look that up. Dan, get closer. The microphone's over here, sweetie. Bring it on over. What's your favorite song?
I'm going to go with the Monster Mash,
Mash.
That's a classic.
You know,
that's my
after
favorite.
The Baby Moses thing... Norman
after your 4-month debut.
Norman Abbott, who was a great guy.
Oh no, it's next. Don't tell him yet. I already got that. I got I'm not leaving that out.
Very good. Okay.
Oh, no, I have to jump in.
I have to jump in because we're doing radio. Yeah. If you could see your eyes right now, like, look at this.
She doesn't need a costume.
Oh, but I get so excited about Christmas and Halloween because I get to dress up like a big egg. I have to dress appropriately so I can be like the yolk in a big egg. And I've had to come up with like things that fit my portly figure. So I come up with the idea to be an egg and then like an alarm clock. And now I'm like taking requests at this point. But I just love Halloween music. Halloween song, Dan, real quick. That's Dan Krause.
Zombie Steve Jobs.
That's not a song.
No, I'm sorry. I thought we were still talking about costumes.
Yes, we most certainly are.
You know what? I'm going to write a song called Zombie Steve Jobs, and then that will be my answer.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Now, movies. Halloween movies are the best, and we got slasher movies, traditional classics, and adults love it. They love the movies, and adults and children alike can enjoy watching the scary movies. Now, I love Halloween, which the franchise, I like all of it, but my favorite's Hocus Pocus. I know what you did last summer. What's your favorite Halloween movie?
I got to go with the classic zombie films. Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead.
You know what?
What's your favorite?
I've been in show business my entire life. My family's been in it for 200 years. Take it from me, zombies are dead.
Yes!
You're killing me, John.
It's all about shapeshifters now.
Yes, shapeshifters. And candy. Last one, candy, candy, candy. Halloween celebrates gluttony. I participate in one of the seven sins, being gluttonous. I can eat as much candy as my stomach can fit, and Lord knows you know I have a love of the fork and spoon, so I can fit a lot of damn candy up in here. So I love it because of the candy. Who doesn't like to be given permission to eat? Favorite candy when you were a kid, John Blythe Barrymore?
Snickers. And when my kids were small and I raided their bags, it was the Snickers were the first things I stole.
You stole candy from your kids?
Oh, yes, I just have to make sure there's no razor blades in here.
Yeah, that's a good excuse. Right. And everybody had a worse candy. Like, mine was candy corn. Oh. I hated candy corn.
You know what? I grew up during the Cold War, and they fed us wax and told us it was candy, and we ate it.
Okay?
And you liked it.
Shut up. Eat your wax.
Eat your damn wax. And you had a hole in your shoe, and we had these little, like four miles to school.
The Helms guy would have these in his truck. The DeColas. It was a little wax Coke bottle with like two drops of that. And then there, of course, were wax lips, which made no pretense to flavor of any kind.
I'd chew them and eat them.
Hey, we had to keep the oil industry afloat, okay?
Yes. You know. All right. Best and worst candy on Halloween.
The worst is candy corn.
I love candy corn.
I
love candy corn, even though it's mostly wax.
People are going to start sending it to you.
They're going to give you...
It's Carnuba wax.
That is it. Okay, costumes. Obviously, imagination brings costume. You can go with the classic. But I have seen recently people have really come up with imaginative costumes. Favorite costume you've seen, you don't have to have worn it, John Blythe Barrymore.
It's a toss-up because that year the killer umbrellas, when Christo had those umbrellas, that year on Santa Monica Boulevard, there were incredible killer umbrella costumes. But last year, 2 years ago, I was at a party, and seven guys showed up, all dressed as Waldo.
Quite easy to find him.
Yes, exactly. I think that's... And the worst costume is probably the one I usually wear, which is I put on a suit, and for me, that's a costume.
Yes. Eric Erickson, best and worst.
My worst costume is...
Seen, you don't have to warn it.
John in the sexy maid costume. That would be my worst costume.
I have a picture of me in a feathered boa and nothing else.
I think I just found my best costume.
Now, also, six activities. Farmers finally get to sell their pumpkins. And who doesn't love to carve pumpkins? Pumpkin carving, setting up bonfires. They're just fantastic bonding experience. Love to do them on Halloween. What is your favorite thing to do as an adult on Halloween? And
I always had, when I had my house up in Pacific Grove, I had worked at Rhino Records. The first database I wrote was for them. And they had a, they gave me all the product I wanted, and they had some a bunch of Halloween records, and so I would just be blasting the and I think it deterred a certain number of people from even approaching my door, but it was, you know, let's set the mood, okay?
Yeah. Okay, and what is yours, Eric Erickson?
What was the question?
What is your favorite thing to do on Halloween and why?
I don't really do the Halloween thing, so I honestly can't answer that.
Oh, well, my
I
favorite mean, thing to do is, to, you know, sex, of course.
Of course!
With the sexy maid costume.
No, with the girl in the Catholic schoolgirl costume. Because that has always been a sex costume.
I will come back with that. I think one of the funnest things to do is to see all the different women who dress conservatively the entire year long, and then that one night they're like, I'm a slut.
Yes! And Dan Krause.
Bad movie night.
You know what? One time a friend called me. It was the film was Trick or Treats, okay, a long time ago. And he said, I had just turned to my wife and said, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. And then you came on.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we will continue with the rest of the Halloween questions with our
guests
next week.
I have a shitload of... I never did Trick or Treats was the exception. I never really did horror movies. In the last year.
Don't you start, because I'm about to list some the movies you've been in, so you better stop.
Recently, yes, I've been doing nothing but horror.
Yes, you are. Now, that is exactly when I got so many things to talk to you about. But speaking of Halloween and spooky shows, you were saying earlier, Norman Abbott, the director of the television show The Munsters, one of my faves.
The creator of
the creator show. Wanted you to play the role of Eddie Munster on that show, but your mom did not allow you to take that role. And in later years, I understand that you thanked your mother for not allowing you to become a child actor. So I would think as a child, I would be obsessed with doing that role.
I grew up in the middle of show business. When I was 6 years old, I knew Rock Hudson was gay, and I knew what that meant.
Yeah.
Okay, so movie stars never impressed me.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do it for the money, of course.
Yeah. And to get to wear the cool makeup.
But Norman was a great guy, and he was sort of a father figure. He was. Hey, I'm a Jew. I survived placing limpet mines on Nazi submarine nets. The rest is gravy.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I
did thank her, because by that time I'd gotten to know my little sister when she was a child actor.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're a kid on a series, you're not even an actor. You're a kid on a series. Will Wheaton discovered this when the Star Trek TNG ended and he had to reinvent himself as a writer.
Right.
And so I thanked her. I said, listen, you know, we've not exactly been like peanut butter and jelly, but... I want to thank you for that. And she also, the other thing she got me to do was she got me to take Danny Simon's comedy writing class. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a writer at the time. I am now. And every other person in that class was a professional television comedy writer. And boy, am I glad I did. As for the rest of it, well, she said to me recently, because she's still going strong at 92, I wish I never had any children.
Your mom.
It didn't take me a second to come back with, I can understand that. You weren't very good at it. And we both had a big laugh because she's very smart and has a great sense of humor, but neither of us was joking at all. We both knew that, too.
That's why it was funny.
Little do people know that your mom was actually nominated for an Academy Award.
That's right. The defiant ones. Donald Trump is a narcissistic personality who is a moron and an idiot and a, you know, bozo. My mother is a narcissistic personality who is extremely smart and a world-class actress, an Academy Award-nominated actress.
So she would make a better president.
She said to me, you always hated me. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm grateful you were my mother. She said, really? I said, yeah, a rough sea makes a good sailor.
Wow. Oh, my Lord.
Family dinners at your house just must be a joy.
Oh, nice. Now, looking at your long list of film and television projects on IMDb, it seemed like, until you just said that, you were a big horror/type actor. And as a matter of fact, I see that you're in a couple films in post-production right now, one called Tales of Frankenstein and Bond of Justice, Kazuna. So can you tell us a little bit about those movies,
okay, well,
and what are your favorite types of films?
Okay, well, I'm in. Just released was Hitchhiker Massacre.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, I'm the massacre-er. Okay, and coming out on Halloween is Dances with Werewolves.
I saw that. I thought that was hysterical. Is that a comedy? It's got to be a comedy.
You know,
it's got to be.
Well, the original title was She-Wolves, and the thing is, even though the female werewolf costume still looked a little cheesy, I was blown away by how much better the movie was than I expected or than its budget justified. And it was the quality of the acting. You got great actors in there, and Dan Golden. And I have one scene. It's one of the last scenes shot on the 6th Street Bridge before they demoed it.
Wow.
And then tells Frankenstein, there is four stories. I'm the lead in story two. And Bon Kazuna, that's a Japanese series. And I think that's already been exhibited, or it's in, I'm not sure, because, you know, everybody spoke Japanese except me. Fake News. That's the one.
That's what I wanted to talk about, yeah. Fake News. It's in post-production. So the hell is that about?
It's about, I play the editor of the paper being forced into retirement.
Okay.
It's a murder story, really, and it's a political murder thriller, and Eric Roberts is in it.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of other guys who got nothing but dumped on by their movie star sisters for 30 years. Okay.
Eric works a lot, though.
I know he does, and, you know, but you know what? I knew Eric. We used to hang out 30 years ago at Tonis. Nobody recognizes me without my red hair, and when I came back to L.A. in 2009, I disappeared into technology for 20 years. I was running software. When I came back in 2009, I was not trying to resurrect my acting career. But people have thrown all these jobs at me because I'm much more castable than when I was a skinny redheaded kid. Mm. I realized I should have been dyeing my hair back then. I would have got a lot more work. Yeah.
Now, so, Eric, did you want to ask?
Well, I wanted to ask something. You had said earlier that you didn't do a lot of horror, but now you're starting to do.
Because that's what people are making. Because first of all, Hitchhiker Massacre was not the first film I made that was shot in 6 days. Okay, I did four of them for Fred Olen Ray that were all shot in 6 days. But it was the first one where 80% of the budget wasn't film and processing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So you get a lot more of that $45,000 up on the screen now. By the way, Yvonne Nagy, who was Heidi Fleiss's partner, financed Hitchhiker Massacre. That's why Ron Jeremy, we were talking about earlier, was at the cast and crew screening, and at the party. He loved my out-call, in-call idea. It's too bad he died of cancer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ron Jeremy's dead?
No. Von Nagy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, Ron will never die.
Yeah.
The hedgehog will live forever.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. It's so funny.
But it is a different industry now because you can shoot a film in 7 days and you can with the digital revolution.
I did four films for Fred Olen Ray. They were on film and they were shot in 6 days. You know.
But that wasn't the norm back then. Now it's
norm. But it was the norm for Fred.
That Roger Corman and all that. I mean,
yes,
that was
I think that Roger Corman film I did with Jimmy was probably 10, 11 days was maybe 12 days was his shooting schedule.
Yeah, the whole Grindhouse idea, just get it out.
Hey,
get it out.
Hey, in fact, when I went up for that job, I was high school. It was supposed to be high school, and I was like in my 20s, and I was working in a toner room selling toner on the phone, and I fucking hated it, and I was no good at it. I didn't sell 1 gram of toner, but they gave me a little quick course in sales. I went in for the audition, and Chuck Griffith, who wrote The Little Shop of Horrors, says to me after the audition, well, you're a good actor, but I think you're a little old for the part. And this little voice in my head said, turn the objection into a question, answer the question, and ask another question. And I said, but Chuck, you want somebody who can act, don't you? Of course you do. Do you really want to go 5-1 on this? And I walked out with the job, subject to Roger's approval.
Now, you grew up, obviously, around some legends. Who, as a child, and you can, as a teen and as an adult, who were you most impressed with as a child and why?
Okay. No one, except that...
For their talent.
I only went out of my way to meet two actors in my life. One of them, I saw him across a room, and I went and grabbed him, and that was Peter Sellers. And the other one was when I was living with David Carradine. We met at the bottom of the stairs. He said, Sterling Hayden called me. He wants me to meet him at Alice's restaurant in Malibu. Do you want to go? And I went, General Jack fucking Ripper, you're goddamn right I want to go. Because Dr. Strangelove changed my life. I was 9 years old during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And a film came out called Failsafe with Henry Fonda, and it terrified the living shit out of me. I was having nightmares of flaming mushroom clouds. And the next year, when I was 10, at a matinee in Beverly Hills, I saw Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, and I never thought about it again. So those were the only two actors I ever went out of my way to meet, and that was the reason.
Wow. Amazing. Do you want to ask him a question about...
When I met Laurence Olivier, I was in my 20s. The real family name is Blythe. My great-grandfather stole the name Barrymore. We're not sure from where exactly, but it is the name of the butler in The Hound of the Baskervilles by Acorn and Doyle.
Yes.
I was introduced as John Barrymore III, and Olivier said, "Nice to meet you, Mr. Blythe." Just to let me know that he knew what the fuck was up with my family history.
Yeah, it was really weird because when I was researching you, I did see where the original Barrymores, and I'll just call them, you know, from the silent, that they had actually gotten their names even on theater from other people, some of them.
The Barrymore name came from... But then my great-grandfather, who was the first actor in his family, and who, by the way, was... As Ethel said, they were indignant in the way that only an Anglo-Indian family could have been.
Oh.
Yes. His mother was Indian. My great-grandfather. Anyway. He married into an old American acting family, the Drew family. My great-great-grandmother, Louise Elaine Drew, founded the Arch Street Theater in Philadelphia and entertained Abraham Lincoln in the White House as a teenager.
Wow.
So, it goes back a long way.
But they put the name together, so if somebody
He changed the name from Herbert Blythe to Morris Barrymore, spelled Maurice, but English pronunciation, to spare his family the disgrace of having an actor in the family, because the Blythes were squires, which that's the basement of the peerage, but it's still a hell of a lot better than being a commoner. And so my, what can I say?
I'm calling them the Blythes from now on.
Yeah.
Did you ever find out from stories within the family why, say, we'll just pick Lionel and Ethel, why they decided to pursue a career in acting?
Because their grandmother owned the theater.
Ah.
My grandfather and his brother, I don't know about Ethel, my grandfather's brother both wanted to be artists and weren't good enough. And so they fell back into the family business, and my grandfather talked about his incredible badness when he was starting out, and he only got to get good because his grandmother owned the theater.
Hmm. So it really was. I mean, we always joke about the family business of the Baldwin family.
That's how I got into it. I mean, I was a 19-year-old with high school dropout with no other marketable skills that I knew of.
And but you said it was for the money. That's why, when you were younger, that's why you wouldn't do it.
I said, well, maybe I should try acting. That's what my family's always
done. But I heard that your mother didn't want you to go into acting, and you signed a contract when you were like 16 or 19
The only contracts I ever signed were for individual jobs, but I started acting when I was 19.
Didn't your mom try to send you away to school?
She definitely didn't want me to be an actor. But you know what? I recently did an interview for a documentary they did about Drew, and the documentarian said to me, well, Drew doesn't want her daughters to be actors. And I said, really? Then why'd she name both of them after roles she's played?
Now, did you ever get to meet your grandfather?
No, he died in 1942, but I did get to have some contact with him when my father and I stole his body.
There's a story.
Yeah. All I can say is that I was looking at IMDb. It says other people buried at Calvary Cemetery. It says John Barrymore Hybrid. That's one of my movies. They've got me and Granddad's empty crypt.
Oh, man.
You know that expression, it felt like somebody walked over my grave? I know exactly what they mean now.
I take it the statute of limitations is over, so you can talk about all that now.
Well, yeah. Who cares?
You said that you went into the technology industry for a while.
Yes.
First of all,
I was always had a head for it. I was one of only two kids at Beverly High allowed to run the $300,000 Zeiss Planetarium. The other was 10 as a sophomore in high school. I think he graduated college when he was 16.
Wow.
It was the persistence of one friend. I was an abominably bad waiter. I never got any good at it. I did it for decades. I worked in places where everybody went home with a lot of money except me. When I got promoted from busboy to waiter, I proved the Peter Principle. And
I got okay at the people part of it, but I never got any good at the time management getting you your dinner part of it. And a friend who had been bugging me to get into computers since high school finally just gave me one in 1988, and 6 months later I was making my living off computers.
So was it just like acting was like it wasn't a passion at the time, or it wasn't something
well,
you were
interested in? Well, I mean, I did get serious about it after the first year or two. But, you know, I ran an actor's workshop. I coach. When it comes to advice, I've got some advice for people getting into
good.
This industry.
So what, you don't work? I just, one of my pet peeves is people who come here and they do the same old job, the waiter, the bartender, da-da. So one of the things I try to do is to get people to tell us what kind of jobs, other than the typical jobs, one can do while pursuing an acting career to supplement their income. That's not a waiter, a waitress, or bartender.
My two careers overlapped. At the same time, I was making money looping Hercules and Xena, making good, steady money as an actor for the first time. Mm. I was doing this computer thing, and I was working at Paramount in the computer department. And I would go into these casting offices, and they didn't remember me. But the same people who had treated me as an annoyance when I was there 15 years earlier as an actor shut down their office, took the phones off the hook, and gave me their full attention when I was there to solve their software problem.
Mm.
So I got a call from Sunnyvale to work in the missile division at Lockheed Martin, and I said, well, if you're an actor, you're in Hollywood. If you're a programmer, I guess Silicon Valley, and I moved up there, and I was out of town for 12 years, although I visited a lot and did a great job for Warner Brothers in the middle of that. Best job I ever had. And so, you know why the defense contracting business is like the movie business?
No.
Oh. Why?
If you ran any other business that way, you would be out of business.
Oh.
Okay. So what do you feel are the three characteristic traits needed to be a great actor?
All right. Number one and most important above all is rhino skin. Forget thick skin. You have to have rhino skin. If you are going to let assholes in suits be responsible for your self-esteem, just go home now, okay?
Yeah.
And save yourself the heartache.
Yeah.
I always told people who came to our workshop, The Big Picture, starring Kevin Bacon, Blake Edwards' film S.O.B., and Robert Altman's film The Player, and you'll know everything you need to know about how Hollywood really works.
What about swimming with sharks?
You know what? Everybody says I should
swimming
see that and add it to the list. I haven't seen it. No.
You would be obsessed over that. Oh, that's it. That's all you need. Now, what are some things you would tell if someone said, John, I live in Kansas and I want to move to Hollywood to be an actor? What is the advice, one piece, you would give them?
Don't.
There's a,
you know, the thing is that celebrity. Now, my parents were working actors, but they weren't mobbed everywhere they went. But I lived with David Carradine when he was the biggest star on television and had just given an interview to Rolling Stone stating that he had a listed phone number. So as soon as you put the phone down, it rang. As soon as it's like, so I got a really up-close personal look at what that kind of celebrity is like. It's much better, and believe me, I know something about this, it's much better to be rich and not famous than it is to be famous and not rich.
Mm.
Celebrity is something you tolerate in order to have money and power. There are much better ways to get rich and much better ways to get rich in show business. And just to illustrate, I was up for a movie called Real Genius early in my career.
Love that movie.
And about 15 minutes into the interview, Kathleen Summers, Marty Ransoff's associate producer, said, I have a better idea. Why don't you drop this acting thing? Come work for me here in production. I should have said yes, okay?
No.
She's already retired rich in Malibu with every other actress I ever dated who said, fuck this, I'm going into production.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's say that person in Kansas doesn't listen to you. Okay. They come out here anyway. They get off the bus. What would be the next advice to give to them?
Well, rhino skin is number one.
Yeah.
Okay.
The second is see those three films because they really do illustrate how Hollywood really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yes, it's very much about who you know, okay?
No, sure.
I don't know. I mean, I've never invested my self-esteem. You know what? The biggest leap I ever made forward in psychological, emotional, and spiritual freedom was the day I stopped giving a fuck what other people say, write, or think about me.
Mm-hmm. That's the, like, there should be a pamphlet they hand them when they get off the bus with those big yeah. doe eyes and just yeah. said,
the reason Scientology no. is the only religion, air quotes intentional, with a celebrity center is not just because they use their celebrities to promote their religion. Mm-hmm. It's because celebrity is a thing that most normal people think they might like to have. People who have absolutely no experience with it and have never seen it up close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
what yeah. what you still have a whole bunch of life left, honey. What would be a dream role? Like your whole
yes,
entire
I'd like
life?
To, I would like to point out that although I'm 63 years old, I'm not a has-been, I'm a ne'er-do-well. I still have my salad days are still ahead of me.
That's the spirit.
Plenty of untapped potential. What would I...
Dream role.
I just played Hamlet 5 years ago.
You did?
Even was though I swore I would never play that part, I did a lampoon of Hamlet in my 30s. Biggest crowd pleaser I was ever in. Mm. Hamlet's last act at the Variety Arts Club. But I did do Hamlet 5 years ago, and even though they're about to do a BBC one with Sir Anthony Hopkins, I want to do Lear, at least direct it. And at this point, I might as well go ahead and play the fucking part, too, because, you know.
I can see you
do. My hair is all white. Yeah.
What do you find being the hardest? What is the hardest part about you once people find out you're a Barrymore? Do they, like, act strange
you know,
around you?
People always
or
say...
Or do they ask you questions, personal
being
questions?
Being John Barrymore, was that a hindrance or a help? And
yeah.
I always say yes.
Ah.
It's a two-edged sword. It cuts deeply in both directions, and I wouldn't trade it. I mean, it's got, for one thing, it's gotten me to a million parties that I wasn't on the list for.
And a lot of chicks. A
you
lot
know
of
what?
Chicks, right?
The one thing that being John Barrymore was good for was I had many opportunities to marry hundreds of millions to billions of dollars. Unfortunately, the horses left the barn, the barn's burnt down. But nevertheless, you know.
Or you still have your salad days.
I still have my salad days. Potential. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you want to talk about a success story. This is for people who feel down and out. And I want you to listen to this because John Blythe Barrymore III, I love saying that. He is such a success story. Now, he's a humble man, so I hope that he doesn't mind me asking this question, but it's very important for you if you are really feeling bad and down and out and just like you really aren't going to make it. This is a success story. In 2000, now obviously you're descended from Hollywood entertainment industry royalty, but in 2012, I read on Wikipedia that you found yourself homeless and on Skid Row,
okay.
And you wrote a
never,
shirt
all right.
and said, "I'm Drew Barrymore's
okay.
brother." Is
First
that true?
First of all, I was never on Skid Row.
Why
okay?
did they put that stuff
and
on
wait
there?
A second.
Well, Wikipedia
was,
is absolutely true.
No. I was technically homeless in that I didn't have a mortgage or a lease, but I didn't spend a night on the street. I mean, I was couch surfing for years, and I've never spent a night
he
on the street.
Had you being a real artist.
No. That was the first story that I was homeless. I was at Occupy LA, and I was there to see it. I had a place to live, but I was there
yeah.
on purpose.
Yeah.
And the original Inquirer article didn't tell any untruths. It said I was homeless, which technically was true.
Right.
Yeah.
And it called me a belligerent bum, which is a value judgment, okay? But other than that, then the Chicago Sun-Times, the supposedly legitimate paper, said I was living in a refrigerator box on Skid Row, and I didn't even know where Skid Row was. I had to ask the people at Occupy LA. I said, "Where's Skid Row?"
As someone who used to work for the Chicago Tribune, fuck the Sun-Times.
Yes,
yeah, so yeah. Right there, I'm with you.
Exactly.
They didn't ask you at all? They didn't like...
Clarence Page, you can do better.
Oh!
So we don't have a rags to riches story.
What was the last
you?
Thing you asked about?
It said that you
oh
were
yeah the shirt the
that
t-shirt
you wore a
okay.
shirt walking
right.
up and down
in 2011. In 2011, everybody said to me, "What do you want for your birthday?" And I said, "I want a t-shirt that says Drew Barrymore's brother on the front." Okay, because listen, Keith Carradine back in the day had a shirt that said "Brother of John" on one side and "Son of David" on the, brother of David on one side and "Son of John" on the other.
And you have to have a sense of humor about these things. I mean, I've got to make dope deals, and the, you know, who's there? John Barrymore. Drew Barrymore's brother?
So, come in!
Okay.
The kids are the weed, dude.
So, I mean, people are going to call me that, so, you know, you have to have a sense of humor about it. So somebody actually got me a shirt that said Drew Barrymore's brother on the front and John Barrymore the third on the back. Mm. And, you know.
Now, it was you see that, people? Don't look in the weed. Fake news! Fake news!
Oh, no.
We're getting the real story!
Celebrity journalism has always been an oxymoron. Mm. Yeah. Unfortunately, legitimate journalism was going the same way. Donald Trump, though, is reviving. He, first of all, he's uniting the country against Donald Trump. And second of all, he's reviving journalism.
Okay, so I will move on from that. But
anyway,
we'll do politics here. Do Dan Krause, do you have any questions for the lovely John Blythe Barrymore, being an actor of theater yourself?
Did you ever pitch an idea to Corman?
No. No, but Roger Corman recently posted on Facebook, should I make a steampunk movie? And I said, Roger, you already did Frankenstein. Remember, his Frankenstein was totally steampunk.
Frankenstein 2020 or something. Yeah. Though,
but when I met Roger Corman, my mind was blown. I mean, I expected like a Sam Arkoff, a guy with a cigar, not this erudite, soft-spoken, professorial engineer.
What, have you and Roger ever done anything wild and exciting together? I mean, other
Does
than...
Does Roger ever do anything wild and exciting?
He did LSD.
That's wild.
I'm sure that's what he wants on his tombstone.
You know, Tim Leary was a friend of mine, and Tim Leary was a sweet, gentle man who would not willingly hurt a fly. But he fucked it up for two generations. They couldn't even do research. Okay, and now they're finally doing research again.
So let's go... I'd like to go back to... What's next? So you've got directing.
First of all, believe me, it pisses me the fuck off that I have to come up with a fifth act.
Okay?
Fifth? I think at this point you're like 8, 9, 10.
I know we normally have
this
three
is Angels
acts.
In America part two. You know?
Yes, I keep wondering if I've got a fifth act in me, but you know what the hell.
But you had mentioned directing, and you had mentioned
I've directed a lot of plays, and they were easy. By the way, I've never been that's not true. I produced one play, and I said if I ever want to do this again, just fucking slap me. Okay? I used to think the producer was the person who did the least work and made the most money. That's the executive producer. You have to get your title straight.
Right.
Okay? The actual producer works his ass off.
Yeah.
I've never been good at the organizational thing. My thing is get me there and I'll perform. I've directed a bunch of plays. They were all huge crowd pleasers. They couldn't make money. They were in black box theaters. Mm. But they were easy to do because I know how to talk to actors. Both of my parents were actors.
Yes.
Right.
Okay?
Yes.
And so, you know, I'd like to direct some more. And I am writing now. First of all, writing is the one thing that I've had a lot of success with. Everything I've written has been published multiple times. But it's all been short form, either poetry or short autobiographical things. And I was at a microtonal music thing down at the Hyperion Tavern. And you've got to have a propeller on your head to even be at something like this, okay?
Yeah.
And John Schneider from KCRW was down there performing with his daughter, Erin. And afterwards, we're outside smoking. And Erin says, what's your name? And I said, John Barrymore. She said, John Barrymore? There's a poet named John Barrymore.
That's what she said?
I wanted to kiss her right in front of her girlfriend, okay? Because that's not my sister, my uncle, my brother, my second cousin. That's me. So, people have been bugging me to write a book for decades because they know I've lived a storied life and they like my writing.
Yeah.
So I've embarked on that. I have some of it written. I need a secretary and a taskmaster. I need a book deal, not for a ghostwriter. I need a secretary and a taskmaster because left to my own devices, well, I have a card that says Sloth LLC. We put the pro in procrastinate.
Mm. You need a deadline, sir.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So film. Have you ever directed film? Is that something
I've directed directed some digital short. In fact, if you go to my YouTube channel, there's some outtakes of me directing a digital short. And
by
the way, if you go to my YouTube channel, click on Lasagna Cat because I'm at 830,000 views.
That's what I was
and I'm trying
telling
to push
Eric
it over
about.
A million.
I was telling Eric, that's the show I was telling
I
you
was
about.
I was reading about it.
You went on some show and for the whole hour you talked about
it's a one-hour monologue
about a
three-panel Garfield cartoon. Okay?
How the hell did you stretch that out?
That's how it was written.
Jim Davis
that
did
is,
it for
by
30
the way,
years.
That's a one-hour cold reading.
Okay, I'm reading that off a teleprompter, and they, after I finished the first take, they fucking applauded that they're gonna be all there all night.
I heard it was
they
bizarre,
did like 20
yet
minutes,
inspiring.
20 minutes of pickups that added less than a minute of film. They didn't even use them. They used the raw first take.
Wow. Is it on YouTube? Can we watch
it? Yes. If my, by the way, the way to find me is Knave Fool. That's KnaveFool.
Yes, on Twitter.
And that's on Twitter.
Twitter at Knave Fool. And then
it's everything. And just if you put Knave Fool into Google, I'm the first thing that comes up.
Okay. Even on your
and,
channel,
and
your
it's
YouTube
channel. Twitter, okay. Instagram, you know, the Publishers Clearinghouse, everything.
What are your thoughts on social media? Like, how do you interact?
You know,
do you
I
like
can't
it?
Imagine John.
I got into, listen. I got into computers at 35, and they were very, very good to me. I mean, I made a ton of money when I was writing software. I was raising three kids in Silicon Valley in Monterey. I spent a ton of money too, but social media is great, except for Facebook.
Facebook. Well, you definitely have to promote yourself via social media. This is the world of social media, so we have to do it, but we got to find a secretary for John.
And I specialize in anti-social media.
Anti-social media.
We can find you a pretty woman with a whip. I think we could.
You know what?
they're
I see one of those every Saturday night.
John's dance cards are full of women with whip.
But you know what? Now that it's become mainstream, I have to find something else.
That's true.
He has a whole movie going on at home. Whip woman number one. Whip woman number one. Okay, last question. What do you, when you leave this earth to go on to wherever, what do you want your legacy to be?
I don't give a flying rat's ass. I've never felt pressured that I had to make my mark on the world. Believe me, I've made my mark on the world. I mean, I don't even know all the people I know that I made a big impression on, but I hear about them all the time.
Right.
Well,
I'm still wondering how the heck you were in Kung Fu at 4 months and then you were hanging out with
John Carrick. I was playing Baby Moses at 4 months.
Oh, Baby Moses.
I was 19 when I did Kung Fu.
Oh, so you and John
They had hired an actor and they fired him the first day and they needed somebody over 18 who could play 15. And I'd been to the set and David, I was living with him, said, "What about John Barrymore?"
See, who you know. Right there.
Exactly.
Right there.
Exactly. And the producer said, "Get him over here."
Yep.
Okay?
Right.
So what is the most annoying fucking question you ever get?
Hey, you know what the best thing about being Drew Barrymore's brother is? There's really nothing.
You heard that. All right. Well, with that, we are going to exit. All exits. We want to thank John Blythe Barrymore III for being on the show. Thank you. Yay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for my fake applause. And I want to thank Eric Erickson, the hottie new film.
True. He actually is a hottie.
Oh, John's going to come next time in his outfit. It is whip woman number two outfit. And thank you, Dan Krause, for being on the show today. Mr. Actor about to do Ghost Walk, I'm sure. And the lovely Albert Biko, who is always filming. And John, can I get a lock and commit that you'll come back on the show next year?
Absolutely.
It'll be so much fun. We'll bring the band back. It'll be the same people. We'll come back.
Yeah. But wait, Jasmine.
I also have a Christian drama coming out that I did. And I said, "This isn't for Hallmark, is it?" They said, "No." And I said, "Good," because I was afraid I was going to be bookended, you know, like Mark Twain with Haley's Comet.
No, you know, like, John, you could reprise your role as Baby Moses. Yes! Moses as an adult. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. If you have any questions, please check out John Blythe Barrymore on Twitter at The Knave Fool. Go and subscribe to his YouTube channel and go to theangryviking.com for the hottie Eric Erickson. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.